Will there be a government shutdown? Donald Trump promised there would be if he doesn't get the money to build his wall. Lawmakers have until next Friday midnight to come up with a deal. Also this week, a judge sentenced former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen to 3 years in prison for a list of crimes that includes campaign finance violations for arranging payments during the 2016 election to silence women who claimed they had affairs with Donald Trump. Political junkie Ken Rudin is here to share his take on these stories and more. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, let's talk about this televised meeting. House Minority Leader, House incoming Majority Leader, soon to be the Majority Leader, Nancy Pelosi, and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to talk about immigration. Quite an event, huh?
It was an amazing. Actually, she'll be the incoming speaker, and it was a remarkable event in the fact that whenever you talk about shutdowns, government shutdowns, the goal, of course, is to make sure the other side is being blamed for it. When Newt Gingrich shut down the government, in the 1990s with Bill Clinton, Ted Cruz shut it down for a while in 2013, Chuck Schumer shut it down earlier this year. But you always want the other side to blame you. It was kind of startling to hear President Trump take full blame, full responsibility for a shutdown if it occurs.
Well, to hear him, it's full credit. Let's listen.
If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely.
And I am proud, and I'll
tell
you what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck.
You can see the finger wagging. Donald Trump, televised meeting with Democratic congressional leaders this week. Political junkie. So let's talk a little bit more about this. Is this something that he can take credit? I mean, obviously, he's grandstanding for his audience. They were surprised, were they not, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, to see television cameras awaiting them for this White House meeting.
That's exactly true. I mean, basically, these are serious negotiations. And both Schumer and Pelosi were apparently assured that it would be away from the cameras, in private, a real negotiation. But Trump wanted to make a show of it. He knows his base loves it when he talks tough about immigration. And the cameras were surprising to Schumer and Pelosi. By the way, talk about Silent Sam. There was also a guy named Silent Mike there. Mike Pence was sitting there throughout that whole event, didn't say a single word.
Was it not? You have to say, it was a Saturday night tableau. Just looking at that, it's like, wow, that couldn't be funnier if they...
It was so remarkable. Yeah. But I think, aside from that, the most remarkable thing was, look, and here's the bottom line. Everybody's saying, well, Trump put the Republicans in a bad place, taking responsibility for a shutdown. Republicans shut down the government in 2013. They got a lot of criticism, and the next year they won 63 seats in the House. So it remains to be seen how much of a long-term political liability this will be.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the theater, because obviously, as we say, Donald Trump wanted to make this a show of how tough he is in his bullying tactics, particularly when it comes to the way he treats women. This is something that I think plays well with his audience. And it was interesting to watch Nancy Pelosi's comeback. Let's listen.
I also know that, Nancy's in a situation where it's not easy for her to talk right now. And I understand that. And I fully understand that. We're going to have a good discussion and we're going to see what happens. But we have to have border security.
Mr. President, please don't characterize the strength that I bring to this meeting as the leader of the House Democrats who just won a big victory.
Let me just say.
Yeah, the House Minority Leader, Nancy Pelosi, at a televised meeting with Donald Trump at the Oval Office. I'm talking to political junkie Ken Rudin. How does that play over time? Again, you're right. I mean, these one-time events, when you're talking about a two-year election cycle, maybe won't last long in the memory. But does it build momentum? Again, we saw the power of women voting in this last cycle. And that was the result of momentum that had built over a couple of years. How do you see this playing out over the next couple of years?
Well, that's absolutely true. And for Trump to say, well, Nancy, I know you have problems with your own Democratic caucus. And she did have some problems because there are some people, some progressives in the caucus who feel that not that she's not liberal enough, but she's 78 years old. And while not to play the age card, there are a lot of young people of color, young, newly elected members of Congress who say that there should be more energetic leadership. But Nancy Pelosi, as we've learned throughout her career, and especially this year, she's a very canny, wily operator who basically knows how to win. And I think the fact that she stood up to the president certainly did herself some good. Of course, the sideline to all this is that Nancy Pelosi apparently agreed on Wednesday that she'll take the speakership, but for only for 4 years, give way after 4 years when younger, perhaps people of color, will come in and take over the speakership.
Yeah, and
assuming the Democrats keep.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's very crafty, because by saying 4 years, I think by law, I think it's in the Constitution, if she says that, that means the Democrats have to remain in control for 4 years. Very
exactly
clever.
Right.
Very clever on her part.
And we do remember that they did stay in power for 4 years when the Democrats won in 2006, but then they got clobbered in 2010. So,
yeah.
You know, look, there's no way to predict what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone in 4 years.
We got more to talk about, Ken. We're going to take a break right here and come back. I'm talking to the political junkie Ken Rudin on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, continuing our conversation now with the political junkie Ken Rudin on the political dramas of December. One of the biggest playing out here in North Carolina, the 9th Congressional District in the spotlight, allegations of election fraud. Tell us what's the latest, and what are you hearing from Washington about how this story is playing out, Ken?
Well, this is remarkable. I mean, this is, you know, we always talk about Donald Trump and Chris Kobach and other Republicans talking about all those people who were casting illegal votes around the country. Donald Trump is convinced the only reason that Hillary Clinton got more votes than he did because of illegal voters in California. But meanwhile, the only indication that we've seen illegal votes here in North Carolina's 9th. And the latest with that is that I know there's a, I think there's a session coming up next week on the State Ethics Commission in North Carolina. But basically, Mark Harris looks like he's the beneficiary of not only questionable absentee ballots and his victory, apparent victory over Dan McCready in November, but also when he beat Robert Pittenger, the Republican incumbent, in the May primary, also very suspicious. So if nothing else, when the Congress comes back into session January 3rd, I mean, regardless of what happens in North Carolina, it is most unlikely that they would even seat Mark Harris. And so basically the feeling is that what the ultimate thing is going to happen there is that there will be a completely new do-over in the election. The question is whether Mark Harris faces Dan McCready again, Republican against Democrat, which is what happened in November, or they have a brand new primary, because Congressman Pittenger says that it was stolen from him as well, so it could be a complete do-over. And we don't even know if Mark Harris is going to be in any kind of...
Well, the Republican legislature has already anticipated that. They're taking a look at the writing on the wall, and as you say, they wrote some pretty strict language about voter ID, but they let go the absentee ballot part until the Democrats actually insisted on an amendment in the original 2013 law. It was the Democrats who put the absentee ballot language in their very strict voter ID law. That irony aside, they see the writing on the wall. The legislature has said if there's a do-over in the general, then there will be a do-over in the primary. So that's already state law. And that, of course, to make sure that the candidate who couldn't possibly win, having been, you know, found nearly guilty of corruption, you know, would face the Democrats. So
I mean,
there will
true.
Be a new primary if there's a new general. That's
exactly state law. I mean, Mark Harris is very popular with evangelicals, and he was all the time when he ran against Tom Tillis. You know, in 2016, he got strong support as well. But if he is tainted, the Republicans absolutely don't want to lose that seat, and so they'll probably have a new primary as well, which is, I mean, I even heard that former Governor Pat McCrory might be interested in that seat. But the fact is, it doesn't look like it's going to be Mark Harris.
Yeah, he lost an election, too. Hey,
that's
Donald
right.
Trump's former, so speaking... Speaking of corruption in high office, Donald Trump's former National Security Office, Michael Flynn, asked a judge to spare him from prison time. Tell us more about Michael Flynn.
Michael Flynn has been cooperating with the Mueller investigation for a long time. You know, obviously, if you don't talk to the investigators like Paul Manafort, you're a great hero, and you may hold out for a pardon. If you do, if you're Michael Flynn, if you're Michael Cohen, you know, all those people, they are traitors, they are sellouts, they are bullied by Robert Mueller and his gang of Democrats, according to Donald Trump. But Michael Flynn is clearly talking about, and he seems to know a lot about what, any kind of relationships with Russia. And Michael Cohen, the former fixer, the former Trump fixer, knows not only about dealings with Russia, but of course dealings with Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels and, you know, hush payments, which basically comes to, you know, campaign finance violations. And that sounds like, well, nobody's going to throw out, nobody's going to impeach a president over campaign finance violations. And remember, there were campaign finance violations against John Edwards, who tried to silence up his affair as well with campaign money. So we don't know what it leads to, but I think Michael Cohen is one of those people who knows a lot. It depends on what he's telling investigators. There are some complaints that he's not telling all. But the fact is, it seems like between the Manafort rulings and the Cohen guilty pleas, they're getting closer to Donald Trump than ever before. Whether you can indict a sitting president is another thing, but it seems like the writing is on the wall that they are getting closer and closer to the president.
Very briefly, at a time when the president needs a loyal staff, he is running out of staff. He, the White House, still in disarray, looking now for a chief of staff. And Mark Meadows, U.S. Representative Mark Meadows, West North Carolina Republican, had been in the running, or at least his name had been mentioned, but apparently he's out.
He wanted to be the new guy to replace John Kelly. The Trump people say, no, you're better on TV, you're better in Congress. I don't think he was ever seriously mentioned, but what cracks me up is there were a lot of talk about Chris Christie being the new White House chief of staff. And I remember when Chris Christie was U.S. attorney, he sent Jared Kushner's father to prison. Somehow I think it will not be Chris Christie.
But he could build a bridge to the Democratic Party, and then it would be congested because he would put up barriers. So.
And George Washington was named after that bridge.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.